This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Taking a look at your 1320 WILS forecast, 12 right now, you get down to 8 tonight. Tomorrow on Saturday, cloudy, high of 18, getting down to 8. And then Sunday, partly sunny, all the way up to 21 and low of 16. I am Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. Let's get into some of the details, what we know so far about the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting. We're getting new details about the shooter himself, 26-year-old Esteban Santiago. Kevin Millat is with us, a security expert at erase.com. Kevin, as always, thank you for joining us on WILS.
Thank you.
Although we typically, when we're talking, it's usually not a pleasant story. Now, you fly a lot yourself, because the issue is he flew with a gun. I'm guessing you do that yourself, right?
Yeah, there's a variety of ways you can do that. I mean, an average citizen without any special licensing can check a firearm into their luggage.
Okay.
And, you know, it's got to be unloaded. It's got to be tagged at the airport where you go in. There's a process where they put a little card inside the case. And also, it has to be a locked case, unloaded, et cetera.
Okay, so as long as it's on, because now what we know is he went to the bathroom, apparently loaded it up. Well, from what you're hearing and what you know so far, how pre-planned and organized was this?
Well, you know, from what I'm seeing so far, I'm not seeing a whole lot of intelligence required. I mean, just it's in a crowded area. Baggage claim as well as ticketing areas are crowded. Even if you simply just fired into the crowd, you're going to hit people. The scenario of thinking it through is that he had to check the weapon through on the baggage side. But as far as his actual skill and capability, he just opened fire in crowd.
Now, this happened within 45 seconds, apparently. Was there really any time for any even armed security person in that area to react to something like that?
Well, I mean, as soon as you hear the shots fired, the trick is to figure out where they came from. I mean, because, you know, if you're in an area like that, you're going to get a lot of echoing. It's going to be loud. And so the first thing is where it came from. The second thing is you got a whole crowd of people. Mm-hmm. So if someone's in the middle of the crowd firing the weapon, you're not going to see it easily. In fact, it might even be easier to see any gun smoke coming up from the weapon more than it would be seeing the actual person shooting the weapon.
So when it comes to the TSA, are they in any way prepared for this kind of an incident?
Well, this is kind of an interesting thing because it was on the baggage side. You know, that is a less secured area where you're checking out. I mean, the whole TSA concept was protect you in flight. I mean, the airports have always had law enforcement coverage, the general law enforcement issues at the airport. But the TSA was designed to stop you from getting on a plane and carrying out some kind of, you know, criminal act on an aircraft. And so when you get the baggage, you've cleared back out of the TSA-controlled area on your way to the baggage area. And, of course, your friends can pull up, get out of their car, and walk right into baggage.
So is there any reasonable way to stop this kind of a thing from happening?
Well, not that I see in particular here. I mean, I'm going to be interested in, you know, the motivation and, you know, where the plot came from and what got him thinking, you know, that this is what he was going to do and so forth.
The detail that I thought was interesting, CBS News reports that federal law enforcement sources told them that about 2 months ago he walked into an FBI office in Anchorage, Alaska, and he told them that the federal government is forcing him to watch ISIS videos. They then apparently took him to a mental hospital. What do you make of that?
Well, the question is whether or not he actually did that or he just thinks he did that. I mean, he could have a mental health issue. It raising right now, it could be a mental health issue that makes him think all this happened versus he actually did go talk to law enforcement and they qualified him as having a mental health problem. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, if he's got the Alaskan Guard is where he had some time. If he's got some military training, and he certainly knows how to use a weapon from that, then at that particular point, he's going to already know how to use a weapon, how to reload it and how to move it. But the real trick here on my thing is why did he go to that location? Why was today the day? What motivated him to take the weapon out and so forth? Interesting that he did it in Florida instead of, starting out in Alaska or some other location.
Do you think there will be a rational reason for it when it comes down to it?
Well, I think there'd be a reason that he thought it was rational. Whether or not we would think that is, you know, a different point. But all of that is important to understand what motivated him, where he got the idea from. Did he get the idea from an ISIL video that he was watching online himself? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in his head said, oh, yeah, the government made me do this. Or did he learn about ISIL and training with the guard? Because obviously, a lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of the combat activity in Iraq and overseas in Afghanistan, there's a lot of guard and reserve involvement. It's not just the full-time regular military units. It's also guard and reserve units. Mm-hmm. They're very actively involved. So if he got training in the guard about dealing with ISIL, then if he's got a mental health condition or if he just got motivated by that, could have been recruited.
So do you think that if you're watching these videos, even if you're not an Islamist, do you believe you can actually be affected to the point that you might act out violently like this?
Well, I think there's two possibles. One, you can have a person with mental health who could be incited to violence by watching the tapes, mm-hmm. thinking that was important to do. And then you could have someone who got curious about it from watching it and then started looking at it themselves online and got recruited. I mean, those are the two possibilities.
And these videos, what are they showing that would incite somebody like this who's not a Muslim?
Well, I would think, and I haven't seen, I don't know what they may have shown in that guard, you know, but, you know, typically they talk about the types of devices they use, the IEDs, mm-hmm. the kind of threats they pose, what, you know, how they try to radicalize people in the area that they're patrolling. So you understand what's going on. You know, for the general soldier, the average entry-level person, you're not going to get super advanced information, but enough to try to make them safe if they go into the combat area.
Does there need to be any change in policy in terms of traveling with guns?
I don't really know how you would do that. I mean, first of all, the inspection factor would be, you know, pretty extensive. And secondly, people in the U.S. have a right to have a handgun in their state, from state to state, and have reciprocity for licenses. For those that do license, then you have the hunters. I mean, you have the people that travel across country and go hunting in different areas. There needs to be a way to move the weapons across country. But the bottom line is, someone that's motivated will find a gun wherever they're at.
So is this not a security breakdown of any kind in your view?
Now, I don't see it as a security breakdown. I may see it more as a question of how he was discharged. I saw one document said he had a general discharge from the guard. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting on how he was discharged and what they followed up with. The interesting point here, Mike, is remember we had the incident here in Dallas on July 7th, followed by another incident in Baton Rouge, where you both military personnel had gotten out and then carried out these terrible acts of violence. So we may need to be looking a little bit about how they're out processing some of these guys. The individual in Dallas should have been dishonorably discharged, and he was not.
Okay.
In
terms of the out processing, what do you think they're doing wrong right now?
Well, I don't know if the screening's significant for the mental health side or not, or if someone's being discharged earlier than their papers would normally, you know, their agreement would normally let them out, mm-hmm. if they're following up on mental health review after they get out. There's a bunch of questions there. I'm sure the military's looking at it because obviously they're concerned about other personnel that may have stress problems or PTSD or issues that would make them carry something out.
How often, though, is it exhibited, those kinds of issues in terms of violence towards other people?
Well, I think it's very, very little compared to the number of personnel that serve. I mean, you look at all the people that serve in the various branches, and they, you know, do a great job and very committed, and they come out and they go back to productive lives outside of the military. So I don't see it as a big issue. I just think that, you know, even one, we want to look at it and say, what can we do better?
Kevin Millan, security expert with Erase.com, right here on WILS. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.